Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Kristen Dreyer Kramer, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
This week we're going to be talking about a bunch of sequels that are hitting the Memorial Day weekend.
Yay!
That would be Fast and Furious 6. That would be The Hangover Part 3. We're up to 9 movies at this point.
Nice.
Because we just already have so many behind them. And then Epic, which makes an even 10.
There you go.
We're also going to talk about some DVDs and Blu-rays and a little bit of movie news. It's all dominated by Star Trek speculation and that sort of thing and analysis. We'll get through it, and then next week we won't talk about Star Trek ever again.
Yeah, we probably will.
Sure, we
probably will. Next week and the week after that, and then a few months down the road. And it'll happen.
But first, before we do anything, let's talk about the box office winners.
And here we are in the Kevin Carr victory segment.
Legitimate victory this time. Again, legitimate victory. Now, I warned Kristen this week because we were seeing a screening. I said I would be doing a victory dance.
And I told him what would happen if he did the victory dance.
But I was thinking of doing just a slow sort of...
Oh, that's even worse.
It's a grinding thing.
Please, no, that's even worse.
Can we get a stripper pole installed in the magical studio in the sky?
Oh, dear. Haven't I suffered enough this week?
No.
Oh.
No, this is the end of a country western song. You break up, your house burns down, and then your co-host does a stripper pole sexy lap dance. No, I'm not going to give you a lap dance. Don't worry, I'm not going to.
If you get a stripper pole, I get a keg.
Ooh.
I get a kegerator.
But what
only
the heck's a kegerator?
Me. You don't know what a kegerator is?
No.
Look it up.
No, you tell me. I want to know. What's a kegerator? Sounds delicious.
Yes, it is. It is a giant keg that you can tap, and it's awesome.
So it's just like a big keg?
No, it's like it's got all the mechanics and everything with it, and you can... Oh, yeah. You need to look it up.
I still have to come over and watch movies here sometime.
Yes.
I promised I'd bring over the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Which you have never done.
Well, we get busy on the weekends.
I know.
We'll make that happen. I'll bring in and you
I'm
get a
awfully busy doing laundry on the weekends, so.
What laundry do you have?
I have a child. She goes through lots of laundry.
I have a child. I just put her in the wash every week, tumble dry, on a low setting, low heat.
Every other day.
So anyways, thanks to my stripper pole, squeaky, sweaty...
Oh, geez. It's getting worse. Seriously, do you need to traumatize our listeners this early in the show?
Yes.
Can't we wait a little later?
I just like to watch you squirm.
Mission accomplished.
I am declaring legitimate victory because last week I said Star Trek would make $85 million, and you pulled a Price is Right switcheroo on me. And said it would make $88 million. We were both too high, actually.
Yeah, we were way off.
Well, for the 4-day. And I was vague on whether mine was for 3-day or 4-day, and I did that so I could declare legitimate victory whatever happened. It is, actually, it came in with $84 million for the 4-day. That included Thursday through Sunday, and it only made $70 million for the 3-day.
Which was way below what they were expecting. So.
They were expecting about $100 million or more. Actually, I think
for the 4-day, they were shooting for $100 million. Yeah.
I saw like stuff like 100 teens like as a high expectations for the 4-day, and I don't think that was going to happen. Even best case scenario,
no.
And then you had Iron Man 3 at 36, which actually is still pretty respectable for like what the third week of release.
It's not bad.
$36 million. Mm-hmm. A lot of movies don't make $36 million in its opening weekend.
No.
And then The Great Gatsby at 24, again, another very respectable hold.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had Pain and Gain, which rockets down to $3.2 million.
But it's still in the top 10.
And
there
it made its
go,
money back.
Michael Bay.
Yeah. Then The Croods, 42, Oblivion, Mud, Tyler Perry. The Big Wedding evened out at $1.2 million at number 10.
There you go.
A couple things interesting. Iron Man 3 finally broke $1 billion. I think by the time this show aired, it broke $1 billion. Mm-hmm. It was really close.
Yes. Which we kind of talked about that last week, didn't we?
Yeah.
We mentioned that.
It
was very close.
It was not a surprise that this movie was going to make $1 billion.
No.
It's on its way. I don't know whether it's going to crack. It probably will crack $400 million domestic.
I'd say so. I mean, you've got a few weeks to go, and really, what else is going on?
Yep. The one thing that the silver lining for Star Trek was it's on its way to break the 2009 movie's foreign number. It did the... People forget this, but because they see Star Trek, the 2009 movie, as a hit, and it was.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a much bigger hit in the U.S. than it was overseas.
Yeah, I don't know. What kind of an audience does Star Trek have overseas? Doesn't it have a big audience overseas? Or well, is that...
I mean, it was a domestic show, obviously, mm-hmm, right. But you're talking tentpole summer releases. These tend to do well. But every now and then you see one of these movies, like The Hunger Games, which made 400 and some million in America, and it made... Mm-hmm. I don't even think it cracked 200 million overseas. Mm-hmm. For some reason, Hunger Games, nobody cared about it overseas.
Go figure.
And that was the way it was with the first Star Trek movie, which only had 128 million in foreign
boxes. That's really sad.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's really, really small. It's on its way to bust that completely through the doors. Some people say possibly because of the 3D and it's a bigger movie and the stars are actually bigger stars now because mm-hmm. 2009's movie kind of helped propel them there.
Yep.
So that's some good news for Star Trek. I mean, it's well on its way to get another movie.
Oh, yeah.
Having a slightly disappointing opening weekend is not killing the franchise.
Which is interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens to the franchise after this, since J.J. Yeah. Abrams is moving on to Star Wars. So who knows what will happen to Star Trek.
Well, and what happens with when it gets a new director.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's one of the things that happens when you have a movie that a director kind of defines.
Mm-hmm.
And it really redefined the entire framework, sort of the way Nolan did with Batman Begins.
Exactly, yeah.
And what do you do with the next one? And you bring in somebody else? You can bring in Brett Ratner and have him, like, poop all over the franchise?
Right. Or do you try to bring in someone from J.J. Abrams' inner circle?
Oh, yeah. Do you give David Lindelof a chance to direct?
It could happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, because he'll continue where J.J. Abrams left off.
Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah.
This is going down some pretty. It is going where no man has gone before.
There you go.
Amazing how I worked that in. You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr and Christian Dreyer Kramer. If you want to email us, you can email us at fatguys@fatguysofthemovies.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. You can go to fatguysofthemovies.com and go to fatguysofthemovies.com/radio for more information on the radio show. Go to facebook.com/FGATM. And Twitter, I'm at Kevin Carr, twitter.com/Kevin Carr.
And I am Katie K. Reviews. Whew, that was a lot of information.
I know. Again, our voicemail number, 740-205-6456. Right now, we're going to look really quickly. We got about 2 minutes here to talk a little more Star Trek, and then we'll put it to bed.
Okay. We'll see.
Kristen's so tired of talking. She's trekked out.
Well, yeah, it's been a long week of Trek news. And, you know, we just spent like an hour talking about it before the show started, too, so... You know,
that's what you get when you have one movie open.
Speaking of beating a dead horse
against nothing.
Yeah.
The only thing I want to point out, I don't want to dissect the movie necessarily because we did that last week.
Oh, yeah.
and we
yeah.
can talk about it there. Whenever the way Hollywood works is it's not just the numbers it makes, because we talked about these are good numbers.
Yeah.
You know, a movie making $84 million over the course of 4 days is really
it's not
good.
Too shabby. Really,
really, really good.
Yeah.
In fact, to put it in perspective, that's just alone. That's more than most of the other Trek movies ever made.
Mm-hmm.
So none of them really broke 100 million. If you adjust for inflation, yeah.
Right, yeah.
You know, like the first one was a big hit, but it was extremely expensive back then. More I want to look at is the fact that Hollywood was predicting a higher number.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't – even the studio, a lot of times rival studios will try and push that number as high as possible. So when it comes in below that, it's kind of considered a disappointment. But even Paramount was predicting $100 million, good solid $100 million for the four-day spread.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting enough, if you look at – even though its four-day numbers are low, if you compare its five-day numbers to the previous film, it's almost exactly what it made day by day.
Well, there you go. So it evened out.
It kind of evened out. But the difference is – I've seen a lot of talk about the mystery box. Was it a good idea to kind of like obfuscate the villain and question and people say, who do you know? What do you think?
I think
30 seconds.
I think we kind of need to just explain the mystery box a little bit more before we get into it, don't we? Do we have a couple of seconds to do that?
Real quickly, the mystery box is it's what's hidden. The secret is bigger than the fact there's a secret is bigger than this actual secret,
mm-hmm.
being the villain.
Sure.
Do you think that worked? Oh my gosh, we're out of time. We'll get an answer real quick when we come back. back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Dreyer, Kramer, and Kevin Carr.
Hello.
Real quick, your answer. Do you think it was a bad idea to sort of obfuscate the villain and make it a bigger story that we don't know what's going on in the movie?
Well, I think as you and I were discussing earlier before the show, it's one of those things that the mystery became more confusing in the end.
Okay.
I think it was more of a story that it was such a mystery and that J.J. Abrams was hiding so much than it was that people really wanted to know what was going on.
Yeah. I think this was not the movie to do a mystery box on.
Mm-hmm.
You could do it with Cloverfield and like, what's a monster look like? What's a monster look like? You could find out, but it's very hard to spoil the look of the monster in a headline.
Yeah, that's true.
The fact that this was already a franchise, it was a tentpole summer thing, I don't think that works. And I think this dovetails into when he does Star Wars.
You know, with that one, I think a little more mystery will be fine because, he's starting over and trying to figure out, again, starting the franchise with his own perspective.
Sure.
And I think when you do that, I think you can give a little mystery.
True. I don't think Disney's going to give him as long of a leash. Which is why he had a longer leash on this one because the last movie was so big.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he could, the other movie he's ever directed that didn't have sort of that mystery box, the mystery of a mystery, was Mission Impossible 3, which
right.
didn't do well, but that was his first big movie.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't have the power to do that.
Well, there you go. Or maybe he tried something different afterwards.
Or maybe Tom Cruise tried to convert him to Scientology.
That could have happened.
All right. Let's talk really quick about the next movie, or the first movie.
Yes.
What is that?
It is epic. A skeptical teenage girl finds herself shrunken down and transported to a magical, natural world where she joins the fight against evil.
So sweet.
Isn't it?
My dad always told me stories about a hidden world where brave warriors watch over and protect us.
Isn't that cool?
Just because you haven't seen something doesn't mean it's not there.
Who are you people?
We are the Leafmen, the protectors of the forest.
I am going to destroy the forest, but I'm only going to do it once, so try to pay attention.
It has wisecracking slugs. That's pretty much all I know about this movie.
Yeah, they didn't screen this one.
No.
It's what's interesting about this one, it hasn't gotten much play prior to its release.
Mm-hmm.
They screened it in limited markets. They did a junket late, and it had like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes and then went down to like 70% pretty quickly once they got the early screenings in. But even then, it was less than 20 reviews.
Mm-hmm.
So, they only had like two screenings on Thursday night in Columbus, which is odd.
And I've seen a few trailers for it, and I really don't care.
I mean, it looks charming enough. It looks fun. It looks cute. It's counter-programming for kids.
You think?
Yeah, because you're not going to take them to the Hangover. You shouldn't take them to the Hangover.
I don't know. A lot of people took their kids to the screening.
Yeah, that happens. Mm. Idiots. I don't know. Well, I'll be checking it out with my kids later in the weekend. We'll see. It might be cute. What I find fascinating, though, is if you look at the poster, it looks like it's just a green version of The Rise of the Guardians.
Exactly. Exactly.
It gets a preemptive suck because they didn't show it to us.
Yes, it does.
Take that, movie.
Ha!
Take that, Fern Gully 2.
Nice.
You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer.
Let's move on to something that matters, shall we?
Okay, that matters. Wait, is that how we're framing this discussion?
Hey, preemptive suck. We move on.
Okay. To the movie that matters the most this weekend, that would be Fast and Furious 6. You know, this cures cancer, people. This is a great movie.
By matters, I mean something that we can talk about.
Oh, okay. Dominic Toretto and his team are brought back into the heist game by using their street racing skills, with a Z,
nice,
to take down a dangerous arms dealer who has partnered with Letty, played by Michelle Rodriguez, whom they thought was dead.
Dun, dun, dun.
You got the best crew in the world standing right in front of you. Give them a reason to stay. Our target's Owen Shaw, former Spec Ops soldier. For years, they've been running jobs in Europe, but it's our most recent job that graduated them to a whole new level. The loss of life is unthinkable. I'm offering you a chance to make your family whole again.
You get us close to Letty and we'll get you Shaw. And you give us full pardons all the way around.
I can't promise you that.
That's the deal. Take it or leave it.
Before we even start with the review, That was like the longest blurb I've ever written to try and explain the dumbest movie ever made.
Seriously. How do you explain that movie, though, really? There is so much in there that they are trying to do with this movie. They're trying so hard.
Oh, yeah.
Trying so hard to make this a smart action thriller.
It's sort of like when they did The Island, the Michael Bay movie, where he's like, I'm going to make this cerebral.
Right. They're trying so hard you can see the smoke coming out of their ears.
And then he like strokes out in the middle of it, and it just becomes dumb again.
Oh, yeah.
Are you a fan of the franchise?
Not particularly, okay. But I did enjoy the last movie. Yeah. I did. You know, they took it in a new direction. They're doing this heist thing, and it was kind of fun. It had a little smart twist to it. It's still cheesy and silly,
yeah.
But I enjoyed it. So I really wanted to like this one. I really did. Oh, I went in there just really wanting to like it. But, oh, it's bad.
What I find most annoying about Fast and Furious, the series, and then Fast and Furious 6,
mm-hmm.
And let me preface this by, I liked the movie. I enjoyed it for just the stupid action.
Yeah.
Which they've pared down.
With an emphasis on stupid.
They've really pared down the character development, which is a good thing.
Although they do get really caught up in the whole Dom and Letty thing, which there is a really long and excruciating scene between the two of them that's supposed to be really dramatic and really moving, and it hurts.
Plods. It plods along.
It's terrible.
Somebody shifted into first gear.
Yeah. And then stalled out.
While they're going 140 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Oh, heavens. I don't know. But here's the thing. I mean, it's an enjoyable film for that level. But what irritates me is sort of like the press. And in particular, there's a certain segment of, let's just say, online journalists who are just like, no, it's just a big bunch of American awesomeness, and it's just so awesome. How could you not like it? And I'm like, it's got fun action, but wow, it's a dumb movie.
Oh, it is so dumb.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. They tried to throw in, like, more suspense and more twists, and the twists that they throw in
is terrible.
Are completely irrelevant. You find out about the twist, and you're like, I really couldn't care less. And you're supposed to be like, no way!
Like,
and you're like,
what?
So?
I was sitting, I don't think I wasn't sitting next to you, but I was sitting next to Nick Harum from New to Netflix and Movies Hate You Too. There's a woman like one row and like two across from us.
Okay.
And she was like, had her arms out clapping. I mean, it looked like she was in a religious revival meeting. I mean, she had her arms out like in front of her. Clapping for every scene. And there was something that happened right at the end, the big kind of payoff moment. And I jab Nick and I go, watch. And she does it. She claps. That's the audience this is going for.
Yeah, because the audience around me was not the audience they were going for. Because, I mean, usually at a free screening, the audience is like, oh, this is great. It's so awesome. You know, because it's a free movie. It's going to be fun. No, the people around me, they're
really?
Like, oh, you have got to be kidding me.
It's ridiculous.
There are some things that are so bad that, the audience around me just wasn't even buying it anymore.
It's a cartoon.
Yeah.
It's a total cartoon. It's along the lines of Transporter 2. And there's a shot in there where something happens. And I remember thinking, if you thought A Good Day to Die Hard was ridiculous because of some things that happened, and then think this is great...
Yeah, multiply that by 100. It's ridiculous.
Real quick, your grade?
Kind of sucks.
I say kind of rocks for fun. When we come back, we're going to talk about The Hangover 3. Life in the fast lane, but at the speed of life and I can't slow down.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Dreyer-Kerner and Kevin Carr. We just got done talking about one of the most profound movies of the summer.
This is the one with meaning.
Fast and Furious 6.
Meaningful movie.
And now we're going to talk about one of the others.
Another meaningful movie.
Yes. And that is The Hangover Part 3. The Wolfpack sets out on one last wild and crazy mission to return millions of dollars to a gangster who's taken their friend hostage.
Aww.
I told myself I would never come back.
Don't worry. It all ends tonight.
Someone needs to burn this place to the ground.
Woo! I like that.
can you remember me? I'm the one that picked the object. Yes, sir, can you remember me? I'm the one that picked the object.
We've been on a lot of adventures together, but it seems like you haven't learned anything. Anything. I'll be in the limo.
It's sweet. It's such a sweet movie, isn't it?
Here's the thing. I thought the first movie was funny.
I thought the first movie was somewhat tolerable.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was, I don't think it was worth the
hype that it got, yeah.
The amount of money it made.
Oh, no.
It was
definitely
not that good.
It was amusing. How about that? Yeah.
When the second one came out, I loathed it.
Oh, the second one was terrible.
And
absolutely horrible.
The two biggest reasons why is because they just reshot it.
Oh,
in,
yeah. It
in
was,
Bangkok instead of
It was
of
the
Vegas.
Exact same movie.
I mean, beat for beat.
Yes.
And shot for shot,
yes.
Practically.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were... It's just that they were worse people. In the second movie, they were, like, meaner.
Yeah.
And it was more mean-spirited, which is Todd Phillips. Todd Phillips is a very mean-spirited director.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what he's like as a person. He could be delightful.
There you go.
For all I know. But I was really mad when the second one did so well, because I'm like, it just doesn't deserve it.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah. Here's why I liked this one, though. I liked this one because it was not just a retread of the first two.
It's true. And I will give you that.
The first 10 minutes, with that said, the first 10 minutes I found excruciating.
Okay.
Because all the jokes were from the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And what blows my mind about that is, if you've seen the trailer, you've got Zach Galifianakis singing Ave Maria in this falsetto,
right.
This boys choir voice. And that's kind of a bit in the trailer. And when they show that in the movie, like, the entire theater laughed. And I'm like...
Didn't you see the trailer?
Yeah, I refuse to believe that none of you saw the trailer. This is not a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there was nothing more to it. There's the giraffe moment has a little bit more to it.
And again, you talk about mean-spirited.
Oh, yeah.
I mean... Zach Galifianakis, his character, has gotten more and more mean-spirited through these movies.
Yeah.
At first, he was just kind of the bumbling idiot, and now he's just a horrible human being.
Well, if you remember...
He's terrible.
In the first movie, he wouldn't swear. That was like one of the bits. He'd walk away and go, gosh,
yeah.
Darn it!
Yeah.
Fudge, and yeah, and that was kind of funny.
Now he is just terrible.
Yeah.
He is a horrible human being.
He is.
Yeah.
They are horrible people. And I found it very difficult to get through the first 10 minutes because I was like, oh, God, please let this not be that. However, with that said, when the thing happens that sets this all in motion, being the kidnapping.
Which goes into a very long and complicated backstory about John Goodman and Ken Jeong and... how they ran into each other and what exactly happened and how we need to fix it. I mean, seriously, that's like 15 minutes of just backstory.
I think that was just there to patch the second movie to say, look, we didn't care about plot in the second movie, but let's try and put one. I gave them an effort. I gave them an A for effort for that because
okay.
They tried.
I'll give them a D+ for effort.
I'll give them a barely
I'll
passing
I'll give them
grade.
That much.
I'll give them a grade that'll get them... into a community college in Greendale. When the movie finally goes and they're actually going through the motions, and I found things funny. I found there were a lot of things in there that were not in the trailer that I thought were funny, that surprised me. You're right. Zach Galifianakis' character of Alan is a terrible, horrible person. And he doesn't redeem himself at all.
No.
But that's okay.
Right.
I found... Ken Jeong kind of stole the show for me, and I like Ken Jeong.
Oh.
And I think that's that reaction is exactly where your meter's going to be.
And I have to say, I spent most of this movie trying to figure out which character is the most irritating. And there are not a lot of characters in this movie who are not irritating.
Well, they really downplay a couple of them. Bradley Cooper's just along for the ride.
Which is what makes him good, you know? He's the one character in this movie who isn't totally irritating.
Mm-hmm.
And John Goodman. I'll take him.
He was funny.
Yes.
See, I liked Ken Jeong, and there's a scene where he kind of hits his first real stride, and it's when they have to. That's one scene they have to break into a house, and it's during that scene that I'm like, okay, I'm just finding this very, very funny because I'm enjoying Ken Jeong as Leslie Chow. And his insane shenanigans. But boy, if you don't like Ken Jeong...
He is okay in small doses. And this is just way too much Ken Jeong.
Oh, I could have had him in the whole movie.
Mm-mm.
Like as part of the wolf pack. He disappears for a whole chunk of it, and I'm like, ah. Then he's back, and I'm like, yes.
I don't know.
That's why I liked it, because he was, and they did something different. Actually, I kind of found the story somewhat interesting. Curious as to where they're going to go. It wasn't entirely predictable.
Okay, here's what I said in my review.
Okay. Tell me, what did you say?
I will say, if part two was The Hangover's evil twin, part three is the geeky little half-brother who wants really bad to be just as outrageous as the others, but just doesn't have it in him.
Well, you know what? What's interesting is sequels are so odd in Hollywood because they always try and top the last
one. Right.
And I think they tried to do that in...
with the second one, definitely.
The second one, yeah. Because they're like, we're going to do the same things, but we're going to lose body parts, and we're going to do other things, and we're going to bring in some really insane sexual fetish stuff. And
this one, they didn't do that, which...
I like that.
I appreciate it.
Okay.
I just wish the movie would have been interesting. It just was... There were a few moments that were funny that I chuckled, kind of. Uh-huh. But it's such a half-hearted movie. I mean, even the characters are like, ugh, here we go again. And that's kind of how I felt through the whole thing. It was half-hearted and kind of dull. And it just wasn't that funny.
I don't know. I love how you describe... I appreciate it. It's like you're talking... It's like you're a teacher with a child who's done something wrong.
Yeah.
And you're like, I appreciate the creativity.
That is exactly how I feel, yes.
But you shouldn't have cheated on your entrance exam to college.
Exactly. Ah. I appreciate that they tried.
Uh-huh.
I will give them a little bit of credit for that. But in the end, it is kind of boring and not so funny. Okay.
My final grade is it kind of rocks. Yours is, I'm assuming.
Kind of sucks.
Just kind of sucks.
Yeah, I'm going to be kind.
Wow.
Because I appreciate the attempt they made.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr. Time to predict the box office. Do you think that... What do you think is going to win, Hangover or Fast and Furious?
Well, no, this is really interesting because I was actually looking up the numbers for both of the previous films in the franchises. And they actually had pretty similar numbers on their opening weekends.
Yeah.
So they're both right around 85, I think.
Okay.
But I'm going to give it to Fast and Furious.
Okay.
And I am going to give it 90.
90?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm also giving it to Fast and Furious. Mm-hmm. I'm giving it 95.
All right.
Wait, let's declare this. Is this the 4-day? Is it including Memorial Day, Monday?
I don't know.
You don't
what
know?
What is it?
We'll leave it
open-ended.
We'll leave that for the stripper pole next week.
There you go.
Part of the reason I think Fast and Furious is going to win, two things. First of all, it's always had an April release. The last couple movies have had April releases and did very, very well.
Yep.
It's now going to be Memorial Day weekend.
Exactly.
So it's a summer movie and now officially. Mm-hmm. Also, The Hangover opened, they bumped it a day and opening it on Thursday... Which means that's going to dilute the 4-day from Friday to Monday for The Hangover's audience.
Yeah, and I like to think that people might be just as bored with this story as the people who made the movie.
All right. Well, those are the predictions. I think that I don't think Epic's going to come anywhere close.
Oh no.
Epic will make the $36 million that was very respectable for Iron Man 3 in its third weekend.
It will not have an epic opening, let's just say that.
No, it won't.
No.
Although I think it'll do better than expected because it's counter-programming.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah. Alright, well, we gotta go to a break, and when we come back, we're gonna talk about DVDs.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. Mm-hmm. We've talked about some fascinating movies this week, guys. Nice.
I don't know why
I give up.
The Madea there for a minute.
There is no Tyler Perry movie coming out this week.
Oh, the one weekend that's not happening.
Yes, no.
And by the way, he was not in Star Trek Into Darkness.
We did touch on that last
week.
Did
we talk about
that? We did, yes. He was not in it now.
Okay. He's not in Fast and Furious either.
Are you sure?
I hope not.
There were some pretty big scenes in there. Maybe he was one of the girls in the bikinis.
Oh, he could have been.
In the street racing scene.
A ridiculous moment. A total the one thing I will say about the Fast and Furious 6
yes.
is there are parts that just make no freaking sense.
Yes, and, that is true.
I mean, there's like a scene where they go to like raid this thing and they're like, it's supposed to be a big surprise. And they got cops you can see.
Oh, yeah.
Miles away.
And there's
lights.
One guy walking into the building looking around like, does anybody see what's going on here?
And then there's a whole, they make a point because it takes place in London.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, there's traffic. You can't go anywhere and not be seen. And they have a whole scene where the street racing where they got like this platform and a DJ and dancers.
It's like a hip hop video.
No cars, totally. Though, oddly I mean, enough.
There are cars, but people are dancing on them.
Yeah.
So it's not like anybody's racing them. I sure hope not.
But it's like, wait, did all these cameras in London not pick up the 3 hours of setup they had for this?
No. So,
anyways, we should move on.
Let's do that.
Let's talk about an email. We got an email from Thomas from Seattle.
Yes, we did, and I'm included. I'm very excited.
Yes.
Thank you, Thomas.
He forewent the phone call, and he went to the email. And it is, and I'll just read it real quickly. It's pretty short. Hey, Kevin and Kristen, much of discussion of movies on the internet centers around about five directors. Whedon, Nolan, Abrams, Tarantino, and sometimes Fincher.
Yeah.
If you don't know the first names of these guys, then you probably shouldn't be listening.
Nice.
No, seriously, listen.
Way to alienate our audience.
Yeah,
good job.
Since these guys can't direct every film, and since I like to keep an eye toward the future, what other directors out there on the horizon are you interested in? Who out there deserves a big break? Thomas in Seattle. This actually goes into a question that you, a little bit of a news story that you had mentioned earlier.
Right. You know, and that's the big thing every week. There's something new about, one of those directors on the list and what they're doing next.
Yeah.
And one of the things that's kind of been batted around out there is that Christopher Nolan is rumored to be in talks for the next Bond movie.
Yes.
So there you go.
Do you think that's a good idea?
I'll take it.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it'll be a disaster.
I'll take it.
I think if he can keep, if let's put it this way, if Eon Productions and Sony keeps a leash on him, I think it'll be cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll do a really good job. But if he decides to suddenly do a Christopher Nolan movie, I think it could be an epic disaster.
They've already taken Bond to a darker place. Why not just throw in Christopher Nolan? Because he is the king of dark movies.
Because it'll be 3.5 hours long. And it'll feature a villain who talks like this all the time.
Well, there's that. Anyway, other directors.
I'm going to take issue with this list, though. I kind of carve Tarantino out of it. Simply because he comes up with a movie every 5 years and... They may throw his name around, but I don't see him as a realistic guy to direct anything but his own stuff.
That's true.
Okay.
But I think he's still one of the big directors that everybody pays attention to. Tarantino does something, everybody pays attention.
Yeah, people talk about him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So what directors do you want to look? Who do you want to see get a big break or get more interest? M. Night Shyamalan?
No. No, thank you very much. I am, for my... My favorite up-and-coming director right now is Rian Johnson.
Okay.
Rian Johnson did Brick and The Brothers Bloom and Looper. And this guy, you never know what he's going to do next.
Okay.
But it's always something that's really interesting.
Okay.
And I actually had a chance to be in a roundtable with him at Toronto a few years ago when he was promoting The Brothers Bloom. And it was really funny to see just him talking about his projects and his background and all the things that he's interested in. And at the time, you know, The Brothers Bloom is this quirky kind of caper comedy. And next he's like, oh, yeah, I'm working on this sci-fi thriller. And everybody's like, what? And there you go. He came out with Looper and it was a great movie. So I think he is headed in great places.
Yeah, I think the danger of an independent director like that is that sort of unproven territory and throwing him into something too big, which I think happened with Mark Webb, where he went from something like 500 Days of Summer, which was just tiny little tiny movie, very intimate character. And then threw him into a massive franchise.
Right. Which was completely
Spider-Man
out of character.
Yeah. And I don't think it was necessarily a triumph for him. I think Rian Johnson's kind of doing the stair step.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he went up to Looper, which is a bigger
Brick
movie.
Brick was a teeny tiny little thing with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And you took a step up a little bit to the Brothers Bloom. It had a bigger cast and more names in it.
Not a bigger release, though.
It was a little bit bigger, but not huge. But then you get Looper, which is a... It was a wide release, mm-hmm. and, you know, it actually did pretty well.
I think that there are some success stories on that. Like, you had, was it Matthew Vaughn?
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who did X-Men First Class, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So he went from doing a smaller film, smaller films, to doing a big franchise, and I think he did a great job.
Yeah.
He handled that franchise well. Bryan Singer actually did that originally with the X-Men movies because mm-hmm. he was doing like, you know, the Usual Suspects, and even at Pupil, I think, was before that. And right. then he does X-Men and kind of hits big.
I would say another one on my list
sure.
would be Duncan Jones.
Yeah.
Duncan Jones, who did Moon, which was a teeny, teeny, tiny little low-budget sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
And then he took a step up to Source Code, which I loved.
I love Source Code. Yeah. It didn't do very well. That's,
no.
That's the danger, though.
It was also, a March release? So it was, you know, wasn't exactly a time of the year when people are going out to watch big movies like that.
What helps Source Code is the fact that it's remembered better because it's a good movie than it was kind of a flop when it came out. Mm-hmm. It just didn't do well. The danger that a lot of these independent directors do, especially if they're doing the sci-fi, is they do really smart sci-fi,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't always play well with a wide audience.
Right, and that's what I appreciated about both Moon and Source Code. They yeah. were really smart sci-fi, and they had good characters and good drama, and it was a great combination.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's where you got to look. You mm-hmm. got to look for the more. I think indie directors have to prove themselves, but I think. Some can launch into a big franchise,
mm-hmm.
but you still need to have them having some sort of gravitas in the market of
right.
what they're doing. And what, part of the reason I like those smaller directors is exactly one of the reasons why I'm leery of Christopher Nolan like doing a Bond movie is because he's such a name he then becomes... It's a Christopher Nolan movie, not a Bond movie.
It's true, yep.
And when we were tossing around Fincher's name, I'm like, well, then it's a Fincher movie, not a Bond movie. And mm-hmm. I think you need to have the if you're going putting them into a big franchise, I think the franchise should be bigger than the director, which is what Joss Whedon is now dealing with Avengers 2. Is
right.
he bigger than the franchise itself?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a question.
Yes.
Yeah. Hope that answers your question there, Thomas. Thank you for writing in.
Thanks, Thomas.
We're going to move on here. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr. And the next thing we have coming up is...
our DVD roundup.
Yeehaw!
Woo! Whoa.
There's a whole bunch of stuff, whole ton of stuff coming out.
Mm.
The Last Stand with Arnold Schwarzenegger,
yep.
which was way better than I ever thought it would be. But it's a stupid, dumb, but fun action movie.
There you go. We've seen a couple of those this week.
There's Stand Up Guys, which you saw.
I did, which, again, it has its moments, and it has its wild and crazy old guy moments.
Yeah.
But in the end, it's all right.
Al Pacino!
Yeah.
Christopher Walken. I don't do as good of a Walken as I do Pacino.
Christopher Walken is probably the best part of this movie.
He's always the best part.
He's the best part of anything he's in, even if he's only in for a minute and a half.
I want him to come to, like, Christmas dinner.
Nice.
Just have him come in and say grace and then leave. And everyone will think he's going to murder somebody. There's also Parker, another January release action movie of mm-hmm. kind of not as old school as Arnold, but a better movie than I expected. And then Jennifer Lopez is in it. So
mm-hmm.
on that. Side Effects, which is a neat little film. Did you end up seeing that?
I didn't. No.
It's
Steven Soderbergh's final film.
Until he makes his next one.
Right.
National Lampoon's Vacation is on Blu-ray.
Yes, the 30th anniversary release.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of cool. And then there's a double feature of Studio Ghibli films,
mm-hmm.
which is My Neighbor Totoro, one of the best movies they've ever done.
Okay.
And Howl's Moving Castle. If you haven't had a chance mm-hmm. to see these are fantastic Japanese animated films worth checking out. And then The ABCs of Death. I don't think you got a chance to see that,
no.
did you? It's 26 short films,
uh-huh.
and it's okay. Then there's also Teen Wolf Season 2, which is Perception Season 1, which is not a bad little show,
mm-hmm.
and True Blood Season 5. The stinker of the week is Beautiful Creatures. I hated it. You didn't like it.
I just didn't care.
Yeah. All right, we got to go. It's time to wrap up. Fast and Furious 6, you said kind of sucks. I said kind of rocks. Hangover.
Kind of sucks.
Yeah, same thing. And Epic, preemptive suck. Next week, we're going to talk After Earth and Now You See Me.
See ya.